I have these crises often, actually, where I just don't see much sense in my illustration. And I think you just have to get through that.
Welcome to another episode of Paid to Draw. I'm one of your hosts, Victoria Tihörn, and I'm an illustrator and lettering artist from Berlin. And today we're recording all from Berlin in different areas and different flats. We're just the future, so we just do it online. Why meet when you can internet? And from the sunniest of all the three flats, here's my co-host Dave.
Hi. My name is David Leutert, but most people call me Dave. I am also an illustrator and lettering artist from Berlin. And today I want to introduce you to our amazing guest, Kati Szilágyi.
Hi, yay. Thanks so much
we
for
usually,
having me.
We usually clap here. Thank you. Thanks for, thanks for being on the show. The last episode was with Benne Rollmann, and we all met up in Berlin Neukölln.
Ah, nice.
And it's so nice. Vicky called it a shithole, and I didn't want to be rude because I was a guest. It is a bit of a shithole, but it's charming. At least it feels like it's a real place with real, because real people live there. Prenzlauer Berg is just such a bubble.
It's
not representative of reality.
I think it's the most contrast you can get, probably, Prenzlauer Berg to Neukölln and the other way around.
Yes. Well, we usually start by introducing our guest here. So if you don't mind, I'll just go ahead and tell people who you are.
Yeah.
Kati Szilágyi is a freelance illustrator based in Berlin. She loves to work on both strong conceptual ideas as well as atmospheric scenes, often with her own humorous approach. Her technique is an interaction between analog and digital elements. She uses classical drawing as well as cutouts and adds final touches and colors digitally. Her clients include national and international magazines, agencies, and brands, such as The New Yorker, Bloomberg Business Week, The New York Times, BuzzFeed, Google, It's Nice That, Dropbox, Hermes, Paris, The Hoxton, and many more. All the way from Berlin Neukölln, Kati Szilágyi.
Hello. Hi. Again.
Hi again.
Thank you for the introduction.
You're very welcome. Are you originally from Berlin?
No, I come from almost the middle of Germany, Frankfurt area. Not directly Frankfurt, but you wouldn't know the little town.
Yeah. Okay.
But I came here about 6 years, 7 years ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm part Berlin, I would say.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. You pass as a Berliner now. I'm still
exactly.
Too new.
No.
People can tell when they see you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You probably look more Berlin than me.
I don't know about that. Well, I do own a pair of Doc Martens now, so I feel like that
very
counts,
good.
Right?
Very good.
Yeah.
That counts, yeah.
Well done.
Thanks. Can you tell us about your career path leading up to this very moment? How did you become an illustrator?
Yeah, I think the beginning is not so unusual. I loved to draw as a kid. I drew all the time in school. And yeah, when it came to deciding in which direction I want to go after school, I was kind of lucky that somebody pointed me into the direction of illustration. I knew illustration from children's books, adult books that contain illustrations, comics, graphic novels, but I wasn't really sure what profession you could do with that. So it was really abstract before I went to university.
Yes.
And then I only applied at one university because I was really lazy back then. And it was close to home.
I can relate.
And I applied to the University of Applied Science in Mainz, which, it's not far from Frankfurt. And I luckily got in. And I was really lucky that for two reasons to end up there. First, I think just when I started going there, the professor for illustration retired and a new one came in. And the old one, I think, was really classic, a bit conservative maybe. And I think if I would have been taught under him, I would have ended up somewhere else, maybe not even doing illustration. But the professor who started was or is Monika Eichler. She's also an illustrator, and she's part of the, I don't know exactly what time, maybe 90s or 2000s scene in New York City of illustrators. She studied before that with Christoph Niemann, Thomas Fuchs and others in Stuttgart. And she's friends with Yuko Shimizu and all those. And she influenced me a lot. She took us to a few students in mind to New York once, and we met art directors, artists, illustrators, and I really fell in love with the editorial scene there. I think that's why I still do so many editorial work. And yeah, then I kind of got an idea what illustration could be. I studied, it's not illustration that I studied there, it's graphic design, but you can like have your own focus, but have to do also other stuff. And I also sucked at most of the other stuff. So I'm really focused on illustration, or on illustration early on. And the other thing I was really lucky with were my classmates that I had there. Because in my year and a few years above, there was a little group of us who were just mad about illustration. We even formed a little collective later on. And yeah, just experimented with illustration, talked a lot about illustration. That's why we called ourselves Parallel Universe Collective, because every time someone else who wasn't a designer or illustrator was with us, it was kind of like our own little world, nerdy illustration world, Parallel Universe. So yeah, that's what got me into that direction at the beginning. And I then graduated in 2012 as a bachelor there. And afterwards, I kind of was really lost. I wanted to become a freelance illustrator, but I was a bit overwhelmed by the, well, the organizational part, but also where to apply, how, whatever. So I think my studies before were kind of like a bubble, a safe bubble where you were just let through college. And then I had a gap year where I was, yeah, quite lost and unsure. Friends of mine were studying master in master's programs or already starting as freelancers. Yeah, and it took me about a year to get back, to get myself a bit more back together. But I think, like back then, that time was awful. But now I'm really glad I had that time of doubt and, I don't know, redirection and whatever. And but I also applied for another university again. And then I went to Stuttgart. And it's more of an academy there. Okay. Again, the focus is more graphic design. But you're very independent there. It's not as structured as the courses I had before. And then I had a lot of time to focus on myself, I would say, and just, yeah, focus on illustration again. Luckily, I again met people who are very interested in illustration as well. And I think it this time helped me to become more independent, to not rely on other people to tell me what to do. And I think that's a good base base for the freelance work we have to do, right?
Definitely.
To get our motivation from ourselves and stuff like that. Yeah, and then I graduated in 2016, and since then I'm basically an illustrator. I moved to Berlin and applied at tons of, or sent out so many emails to art directors, and then the first jobs came in, and my portfolio grew, and then more jobs came in, and that's how it began, I would say.
Cool. Nice. Was that a master's program in Stuttgart?
They have a diploma still.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I I came into a class that already knew each other, but I didn't have to do the whole course, so half the course.
Okay.
And it's, mm-hmm. yeah. But it was totally different than what I did before, but I really enjoyed it. It was much more loose and, yeah, as I said, not so led on.
Yeah. And that, I mean, it sounds like that worked well for you.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Just not I was having too much structure.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes mm-hmm. I think it can be also scary. So I was happy mm-hmm. that I didn't start out there. Mm-hmm. So I had both experiences. And I was a bit disappointed first because, again, when I started there, the professors changed. One retired, a really mm-hmm. famous poster designer, Niklaus Troxler. And mm-hmm. One of the people who applied was Nicholas Blackman from...
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you... Back then, Legend. He was still at the New York Times mm-hmm. art director, I think. And I met him back when I was there with my old class from Mainz, and he's super nice. Mm-hmm. And yeah, exactly, and a legend. But he didn't get it. I was so sure he would get it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I thought the focus would be more illustration, and mm-hmm. then it wasn't. It was, again, more poster and graphic design, but it was okay. Also, these disciplines influence you a lot, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The professor then was Patrick Thomas. He's artist / graphic designer. And what he really influenced us to do was go on Instagram. And I would say right now that's really helpful or when I started out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he got us all of the class on Instagram back in 2013 when it wasn't that.
Wow. That was probably the best time to start.
Exactly.
When you still
exactly.
had an so actual chance of reaching people.
Exactly, exactly. It wasn't before the algorithm got mad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the golden days.
Exactly.
I want to get back to something you said, that somebody pointed you in a direction of illustration. And I want to know more about this. How did this happen? Like, did you always draw when you weren't supposed to? Or what led to this situation that somebody said, hey, you should try illustration? Because usually mm-hmm. when children or teens draw, it's not like parents are like, you're going to be an artist. It's usually the opposite. So I want to know more about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, first, my parents are very open about that, about my career choice, especially my dad. He's very, very supportive sometimes. I sometimes also appreciate my mom being a bit more reserved because I know when she compliments my work, it really means something else. No, but I'm really grateful for both of their support. But yeah, they didn't have any clue about illustration as a career. So I think it was a friend of mine I met at like a children's summer camp where I helped out. And she mentioned that her ex-boyfriend, you know, when you apply at colleges, you have to do a portfolio, and mm-hmm. he gives those courses. And she said, oh, maybe that's something, because he also did illustration in Mainz, I think. And she pointed me to his direction, and then I took the course, and he pointed me to Mainz. So that was the way. And my parents were just, okay, do what you want, which is... really nice, but also awesome. Sometimes I felt a bit lost too. No, but I'm grateful.
Yeah, when they let you do anything you want, that can be overwhelming as well.
Yeah.
Like also, I feel like when clients let you do what you want, it's like, what? I cannot do anything anymore.
I don't know, some frame or something. Yeah, That's true. I rather have more restrictions and work within those. Then be totally free sometimes.
Yeah, same for me.
Yeah.
I want to know more about your drawing practice because probably everyone on this podcast and most people listening like drawing in some kind of way or are interested mm-hmm. in that. And it looks so different for everyone. So I want to know what about drawing brings you the most joy and what does it mean to you?
Yeah. That's really a really nice question and a difficult one, I think. I think when I started, I wanted to be a perfectionist but I never were. And then it was interesting to start university, and especially my friends I studied with, who are also interested in illustration, they had so different approaches, and it was so interesting to see it. I think you learn so much from, friends who also do illustration, or your classmates or studio mates. And sometimes their imperfection in their illustrations were what intrigued me the most. So I also experimented in that direction more. And I think when I draw, I always try to find something that intrigues me about the illustration. It can be content-wise as well, but also, sorry, my dog is growling. But it also can be a certain shape or composition, or one second, I will just. I think she's irritated why I speak to my laptop. Where was I? I'm interested in interesting shapes. I draw a lot of people, so I really try to find out when do I find a nice abstraction in drawing people. What parts can I exaggerate, or I play with sizes. Those are just some examples that I find interesting. But then sometimes I really don't find drawing interesting, or I really have a little crisis. And I just saw another illustrator, Gizem Vural, talking about that the other day. Mm-hmm. She asked her community if it's normal that sometimes you really don't like illustration or don't get anything out of it. And she's so talented, does really great atmospheric work, and experiments a lot with drawing. And coming from her, that was really interesting, because she seems to do illustration all the time. And the answers were, everybody was saying, no, I know this, and you will get through this. And yeah, experienced that as well. Right now it's totally fine, but I have these crises often, actually, where I just don't see much sense in my illustration. And I think you just have to get through that. I don't know how it is with you, if you also experience those phases.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm stuck in it right now a little bit.
Oh, no.
And I'm just, when this happens, I have to consciously make the decision to draw. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I have like the need where I would just like draw something I saw and mm-hmm. thought like this could be a cool thing. And now I have to like, okay, let's make a routine, because this usually helps. But it is kind of forced. It's like when I want to go to the gym, it's like it feels like this right now, because I naturally don't want to work out. So it's like forcing myself. Yeah.
I don't know if there's a English word for Schweinehund, but kind of like get that over with, that feeling of not wanting to do that. Yeah,
that's cool. A really good word.
And how about you, Dave? Do you always feel inspired to draw, or?
Oh my God, I'm so distracted. Your dog is the cutest. I can't talk about drawing anymore.
You can see the dog, you can only see like paws in the air. It's so adorable.
Oh, she's so cheeky.
My little heart. Yes, occasionally. I don't know. I always like drawing. I think my problem for the most part is more that I never seem to have enough time to work on all this. Like, you know, to just... I just have too many ideas, and and there's just not enough hours in a day. But
can you focus sometimes on one, or is it like, okay, I'm starting this. No, I want to do that. How is it with you?
Sometimes it's hard to focus on an illustration when you know there's so much else you should be doing, or maybe it's just my brain telling myself that I should be. I don't know. When you're running your own business, when you're a freelancer, there's just so, it always seems like there's so many more important things to do. And sometimes you just have to force yourself, or just be okay with just spending 3 or 4 hours on a drawing, because that's part of the job too, obviously. So I don't know. I can't consciously remember having had creative block, but I know it's a thing. I mean, I don't doubt that it exists.
You're not gaslighting us.
You're so lucky.
But that sounds good. Yeah, yeah. That sounds really good.
Yeah. One thing we talk about a lot on this podcast is style. And I just gave a guest lecture at SVA last week, and my former teacher, Carol Fabricatori, said she doesn't like the term style. And I get mm-hmm. it, because what she said was it just constantly evolves. It's constantly changing.
That's
so
true.
There's just when you say style, then people just have one type of aesthetic in mind. And it's really more fluid. But for lack of a better word, we'll just continue to call it style. And you have a very distinct, very unique style, a very immediate, loose and playful drawing style. And it almost feels a bit improvised at times. Your illustrations kind of look like doodles, and I mean that in the nicest way possible. but I'm sure there must be a strategy behind it. So I want to know, what's your process like? Is there an order to the chaos? Sorry, that came off so rude. Your drawings aren't chaotic.
Doesn't.
But there's just a lot going on.
I just had a talk the other day with our Dave and I are in the same agency, and with the chef of the agency, and he also said sometimes my illustrations come off as chaotic, and also in a good way, and he wonders if it comes from the chaos in my head. And it is true. I couldn't deny it. We were talking before that I sometimes I can't give short answers. I always think in multiple sentences, especially German. You can have so long sentences, and
they can go on forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was reminded of now. But about the loose style, actually it is conscious. Mm-hmm. Because when I was starting out with the first jobs, you know, when you have a job, you first send sketches over, and then mm-hmm. one of them gets approved, and then you go on to the proper illustration. And when I was sending over the final illustration or a draft of the proper illustration, the first times the clients were saying, okay, this is nice, but somehow you lost your vibe of the sketch. Because it was more humorous or loose or, I don't know, had a nicer feel to it. And mm-hmm. I was then looking back at the sketches and reevaluating them. And I think they were right. Sometimes it is okay to that I draw very perfectly or something. But mm-hmm. I really like what you also described, the looseness to it, mm-hmm. The doodly feel. And when I was starting out as an illustrator, every job I took so much longer mm-hmm. For than what the value actually was or the budget, mm-hmm. because I really needed to experiment and find my way. As you said, it's not static, it's fluid, your style or whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. And I was really focusing on getting the looseness into the final illustration as well. Mm-hmm. I draw, like you said in the intro, I draw analog as well as digitally, and I work with a light table, so I have the sketch and then I trace it.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. And then I try to keep up with the looseness of the sketch. And mm-hmm. I think by now I mastered it more or less, but mm-hmm. it took some time. And in the beginning, my illus were looking much more stiff and not so vibrant, I think, than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what is it about analog work that speaks to you? Because mm-hmm. whenever I look at your digital work, you seem to be using brushes that make it look very much like it was and made just with a crayon on paper or whatever. Mm-hmm. So what to you is the benefit? Because arguably it takes longer. Not having undo shortcuts, having to scan the whole thing, but it's also fun, of course, just getting your hands dirty.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I really like that part.
Mm-hmm.
I think now she bites into her stuffed animal and is happy.
Perfect.
Good.
It looks so brutal, and I she sometimes ripped it, so I had to sew it. It's really like Frankenstein's monster now. It's a child's toy, so it's evil.
It's a classic anyway, dog toy.
Yeah, totally, the IKEA dog. So many people have it. Back to the question, I forgot. Say again.
Oh, just what is it about analog work that's that intrigues you as opposed to working digitally from the start?
I really like the process or drawing analog. I think more mistakes happen then, and I still like that.
Yes.
I sometimes suck at taking time to experiment. I really want to get back into that, but doing the analog part, I think it's even for jobs is still kind of experimenting sometimes because mistakes happen. And then again, I think I have to keep up with it, but I don't have an iPad yet. I have a Cintiq drawing tablet, but it's not with a screen. So I think if I had one with a screen, I probably would have switched already. That could be it. But then again, I just recently I found brushes that I'm kind of happy with. Somehow I still like the analog brush more. Probably not many people or only me can see the difference, but I still prefer it. But yeah, it's not very economically. I actually wanted to change and buy an iPad in, I think, 2020 because I was traveling a lot, and then COVID happened and I didn't travel anymore. Okay. So I stuck with it. But yeah, it's kind of something of a, I still like it, the experimental part and convenience. Although it takes longer, of course, in the beginning you have to get used to doing it all digitally. Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes drawing on an iPad or maybe a Cintiq, anything with a screen, it kind of feels like it's a sort of a digital light table.
Exactly. You can even shift it a bit, or especially at an iPad, you can turn it like paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not the same, I think, with my non-screen Cintiq. Yeah. Do you still do analog sometimes? Like, I know, Dave, you do the sketches, your sketchbook analog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't really do anything analog anymore. I don't know if I can still do it. So maybe I should try and get some paper I'm guilty of double tapping the paper and stuff like this when I make a mistake. You double tap on the iPad to remove
it. Why is it not changing?
So this is really embarrassing. I went to like a drawing night and I did this and I looked around. Did anyone see me?
Nobody saw anything.
But it's really nice. I really love it because it makes you feel like connected to your drawing more than digitally. But I just love efficiency and convenience. So
No, it is. It really. I don't even do vector work, which now with the new project might bite me in the ass. We'll see.
Because it's not fun.
It is. Not it's not fun. Drawing. It's more.
It's math.
It's math, yeah. Yeah.
And it's so like clean, especially if you want some dynamic from your sketch to be in there. And then to have something so clean and make it look like it's not clean. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah, it's like one step forward, drawing the shape, and then five steps backward, making it look like analog. And there are styles that are perfect with Illustrator, but mine would be really difficult to adapt to in the beginning, I would say. Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier that you're always trying to, because this just really resonated with me, I always attempt to achieve the quality of my sketches with my final work. And I feel like most of the time I just fail. The sketches almost always look better.
Right?
It's so annoying.
Yeah. I don't know why there's some magic into not overthinking, probably, or just the first attempt. Sometimes it's just the best, especially, I would say, sometimes with expression of people. I really like my first sketches, and then later on, I take so many attempts to come close to it.
I wanted to hear more about another style you work in. Which is slightly different. It's paper cuts. So I don't know if you do this digitally or analog. How and why do you create this beautiful silhouette cutouts?
Yeah, I think that all started also at the beginning or at the end of my studying in Mainz. Mm. I was so focused on drawing, especially very with fine liner and very accurate and detailed.
Wow.
And okay. I liked that, but it also sometimes annoyed me. I had a phase where I tried a bit of painting and acrylic. I was really bad when I look back at my first study. I was really bad at the whole digital thing. And I think now that people have iPads from early on, it's totally different. But back then, I mean, we all had computers, but still nobody knew Photoshop when we started studying, I would say. Or we didn't, of course, have Procreate. And I was really an analog person. But I was, yeah, all about the outlines. And then I want to try something different. And I know how it is. I don't know if it's the same with you guys, but when you go to an art supply store, it's like heaven. And I just want to buy everything. Yes. So I have so many stuff I never used. And I had the same with a cutter that I probably needed for university, and then also paper. And I just started out experimenting. Yes. I just started experimenting with. Sorry. I don't know. She's not like that usually.
She sounds like a person.
Yeah, she sounds like she's speaking.
She wants to talk about her style.
Why is no one talking about me? Was ist denn los, Maus? I'll pet her. Maybe it works. Yeah, and about back to cutout. And I was just trying out cutouts, I think, as a way to get away from drawing. And what I really loved about it instantly is that you have to think in shapes rather than outlines. Mm-hmm. And with a cutout, it is just, or the basic cutout, it's just two colors, and positive and negative. And then again, also, you have to... it's not a paper collage, it's really cutout. So you have to think that when you cut the wrong thing, it will just fall out or you lose your shape. So you really have to start thinking differently. And I found that very interesting. Different shapes then appeared. And yeah, I was doing that for quite a while, mainly for exhibitions or just experimental work, especially in the gap year. And then when I studied in Stuttgart for the diploma, I tried to experiment with both styles more. And I also, for my diploma project, I also focused on both styles, and then also wanted to see how they would work digitally. So that's when I started to go into that direction. And I actually applied with my portfolio at Art Directors also with both styles. And it was really interesting to see some art directors, most of them prefer the drawing style. I think it's more more obvious or more direct, or how you would say it. And the cutout can be more abstract, especially my early projects with it. And interestingly, the US clients asked for the cutout style first. Mm. I think the first one was BuzzFeed and then the New York Times. And at that stage I only did the analog cutout for exhibitions, because for client work you need to be faster, of course, especially for the New York Times. And and then I did it all digitally, but reminded myself how the shapes look like and everything, and tried to keep the cutout feel to it. But it evolved a lot. I think by now, sometimes when I work on it, it's not so much left of the cutout feel, but I still have the shapes, and maybe work a lot with black, and try to remind myself about it. And sometimes it's a bit more close to what I did early on. And I don't do much analog work with cutouts anymore. I really want to do it more. It's so fun. But I think more for exhibition or myself, for sure.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you probably actually need the knowledge of what an analog cutout looks like to make like a convincing digital cutout style.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just like vectors again. It's just
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
I even do it also in Photoshop. I'm just better with Photoshop.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's really cool because the cutout style looks a little bit like a dark side because it has more black and it's more heavy and it's like a little more harsh. And it, I feel like it's like maybe, so I don't know, I'm interpreting as like different kinds of personality going on.
I like that. Yeah, and then I was so happy that I couldn't be too detailed with it. I still try to be as detailed as I can because I'm, not good at simplicity, but, it doesn't come easy to me. But I'm a bit more forced to think more bold. I really like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, really cool.
Cool. I've asked you about this during an Adobe Live before in the comments section or in the chat, but I'm just gonna ask you again, because you're so diligent when it comes to sharing your work on social media and on your websites. To me, it sometimes feels like you're sharing new work on either Instagram or Behance almost every day. How do you manage to be so consistent about posting new projects online?
I'm not anymore. I used to be really good at it, but somehow I lost my vibe. I don't know. I still try to be very or more or less consistent on at least Instagram, at least one platform.
Mm-hmm.
But my website is so outdated and Behance as well. But I know that it was so exhausting when I started out applying at all those art directors. With you have to look for the email address, you have to make a portfolio that fits. I try to curate it for every art director directly, and then send it out, maybe not hear back. And that is still good, especially if you want a certain job. But I think it's still much easier to try to be consistent, more or less, to post on social media, because we hear that still a lot of clients see your work on social media. And I would, even if I would look up an illustrator I saw somewhere in a magazine, I would look up for their Instagram, because
that's the first place you go to.
What's their latest work, what have they done? Of course the website is interesting, I look at those as well, but it's a bit more blog like especially Instagram. So I keep that in mind, that although it's stressing and the algorithm sucks, it's still better than the other work. I'm not good at reels, so I lost a bit of interest, but I think I can get there. But yeah, I'm not as good as I used to be.
Well, it doesn't show at all. From my perspective,
good.
I still feel like whenever I open Instagram, I see new work of yours almost every other day. And even if you only post once a week, it still feels like you post almost every day.
Exactly.
So I was always just wondering how you do it, but maybe it's also just, I don't know. It's just
I like
the
that
illusion.
The appearance is that I,
yes.
yeah, that yeah. the illusion is there. That's good. No, but I post all the time. I'm very.
it's all I
don't
do.
Know the word. Yeah.
But do you still do cold emails and stuff? Do you still reach out to art directors?
Not anymore, but I always, every now and then I collect mail addresses that I get, mm-hmm. or names. One thing I did in the beginning was look at other people's Instagram, other illustrators' Instagram, because sometimes they post who's the art director,
mm-hmm.
who the art director is, and then I noted their name and I was looking for their mail. And sometimes I still do that when I, or at least do a screenshot of the work when I think, I really want to work with that magazine or whatever. But no, I haven't done it in a long time, thankfully, because I had enough jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's always a good idea. It's much more direct. Yeah.
Yes.
I have done this with your account.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think like it is community service kind of to share the... Because
exactly.
there's enough opportunities for everyone. And I try to do this too. I don't do so much editorial, but when it's appropriate, I think that's a really good thing to do if you want to reach out to art directors.
Exactly. And you still have to do the work with putting to yourself, putting yeah. together your portfolio and all the thing. And it at least gives you a hint where to apply. Yeah.
I write down contacts, but then I mm-hmm. never follow through. I never go. I never reach out to them. So yeah. I know they exist, but they don't know I exist. Because I always, so you've worked for the New Yorker and the New York Times, and those are definitely, you know, those are just publications I would really like to work with at some point.
Yeah.
And I mean, technically, I know how it works. You just find out the section you want to. You think your work could be good for,
yeah.
and then could fit, and then you reach out to them, and they may or may not hire you. And ideally, maybe you follow up every 3 months or so. So in theory, I get it, but I just don't do it. So I also can't be surprised that they don't hire me because they don't
exactly. Yeah, sometimes it really is just that. And then again, I mean, to how many art directors I reached out and I never heard back or just mm-hmm. heard back, ah, nice, you're in the archive now or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I would love to see both of your work in the New Yorker. I don't know, Vicky, if it's also something you're interested, but that would be so nice.
I am interested, but I have done zero steps to do so. I haven't even written down a contact, but I wanted to.
Wow, we're so bad at our jobs.
Yes.
But Vicky, I could really see your style in the New Yorker. I think it would fit really well.
Fine, I'll apply.
Yeah, just do it.
If I have to.
No, that would be really nice, but I'm just so lazy when it comes to approaching art directors. We had this recently with Bene Ruhlmann that... Yeah, he gave the nice tip of sending an email with just a couple of images so they would right away mm-hmm. see your work and then they could like do more steps and check out your portfolio and all of that. And it's mm-hmm. so easy. You don't even have to make a PDF or anything. You just have to pick like maybe three images that represent you and send it out. And yeah, I think that was a really nice tip.
Yeah, well. It's pretty straightforward. To all our listeners, don't be smarter than us.
Yes.
Do the
be
work.
Be like Kati.
Yeah, I did it so much in the beginning and I think it really helped getting my career started. But then part of it is just luck. So even if you, what you said, Dave, follow up every now and then because sometimes it's just not the right time. The art directors change as well. So you will, maybe the next one is a fan of yours and the one now isn't. Sometimes it just happens. Mm-hmm. But they won't. Sometimes they don't find you if you don't apply. But then again, social media, sometimes they do. So,
yeah, I guess it's a matter of, well, ideally doing both. But just like mm-hmm. you said, if they bookmark your website or whatever, then that's still a success, I would say, right? Maybe there's a job, maybe right there's now. Not a good fit right away, but maybe a year or two down the line. It's just, it's about playing the long game, I guess.
Exactly. Sometimes I heard back from clients after a year. I mean, now I don't know. And I always keep forgetting asking them when I get a job.
Yeah.
Where did you find me? But at the beginning, it was definitely because I reached out. And now I don't know if it's because I was published somewhere or my Instagram or somebody posted about me. I don't know. Yeah, that's also an advice. Ask where you're. Work has been seen, has been found.
So right now I know that you've been home a lot because you have a really cute dog which needs all of your attention and also in this podcast. But usually I saw that you shared a studio with some other artists or maybe just creatives. Do you work from home or the studio, or which one do you prefer?
Right now I work from home. I still have my space in the studio. I still pay. it's a bit of both. I'm still quite cautious about COVID, mm-hmm. especially in the winter. And since the start of COVID, I didn't go for a longer time to my studio in the summer sometimes. But then also our dog, because I was really optimistic that she will be the perfect office dog. but like so many other wishes, you have to make changes. And she's great, but she's not a chill dog. And we, in our studio, we are 20 people who are coming and going.
Wow, okay.
And she just loves people. She met you, Vicky. Already loved you.
It's mutual.
And every time somebody would get up, she would be like, oh, they went up because they want to pet me, I will follow them. And I wouldn't get any rest and she wouldn't get any rest.
Sounds adorable, though.
Yeah, adorable. So I will probably look for a studio space in the future where there are less people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if other dogs would work out too. We'll have to see. But I like working in a studio. But then again, I love silence, actually. I love concentrating, especially when I get a briefing, get a text, think about concepts. And then later on, when I work on the drawing or coloring it in digitally, I'm totally fine with talking a bit. Or, yeah, at home, I don't talk with myself. I listen to music or I listen to podcasts. But I'm not, I don't know, I like to be focused. So I'm not a big chatter. And I'm a bit, I don't know, there are people who can do both very well. I can't. I'm really... So the noise cancelling headphones were my best. How do you say buy? The best purchase I did.
Purchase.
Yeah, investment totally for the studio. But I met so nice people there, and I'm really grateful for the contact, the people I met, the contacts and everything, the connections. And then again, I'm a bit of a, in Germany we say Drini. Introvert person.
A homebud.
Homebud, yeah. So I'm really happy the dog gets me outside, but I'm also happy working from home. I don't miss it. I think you two now have a studio, right? I like Vicky, you for a long time, and Dave, no?
I don't. I haven't had one in, what's 20?
That's your home. So. That looks so nice. Oh, wow. Well,
I mean, I have a designated room to work in, so that's definitely, that's wonderful. That's a privilege. But to me, it gets really lonely. I get the idea that I also don't want people talking at me when I'm trying to work creatively, especially in that early stage of every project. Yeah. But I do miss the companionship and just having people around and just being able to bounce ideas off of each other and just having that sort of creative exchange.
Yeah, that's really good. Would you like more of a artistic, chaotic studio or more very designy, clean stuff?
That's a really good question. I don't know, honestly, because I would mostly need a desk for just my laptop and an iPad and sketchbook.
Yeah, so that's a base, but when you
It would be nice to have, you know, sort of both an office and a workshop or atelier, said, you know, just somewhere where you can just be messy and maybe paint or something.
Yeah.
That would be fun. But I'm not too picky. At this point, I would take anything.
Yeah, so, Berlin is so expensive.
Yes, so very true.
Yeah. I mean, it has some downsides and upsides. I mean, I think I really like being in the studio with my best friend here. It's like a way to maintain a friendship when you're an adult as well. It's like makes it so much easier, because I don't know about you, but ever since I hit the age of 30, it's become so much work to like maintain friendships, because you don't just like go out and hang out, but I also like to stay at home, so that's probably also a reason. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of loud and it is messy and you have to deal with other people as well. So I think, I don't know. Sometimes I do like to work at home as well. Then I consciously make the decision to today I stay at home and have some quiet and maybe do laundry or something.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a thing I also, I got better at it, but in the beginning I felt kind of like an obligation to be in the studio. And it totally came from within me. But I thought, the people wanted me there because they also could have chosen someone else to be at the studio instead of me. And now I'm not going every time because today I have a call and I'd rather do that at home. And I felt pressured. And I was a bit of a people pleaser more in the past, I'd say. So that was something I had to learn too. But then again, it's nice to learn these things and to, I don't know, not think that everybody, I don't know, you have to please everybody or something and find your, and sometimes you work from home, sometimes you work from a studio. That's actually something nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think whenever you, whenever I did have a studio in the past, I felt the same guilt when I didn't go in, but I, but I think I'm now at a point where I'm okay with just, if I had a place, I would just go in maybe two or three times a week and just be okay with that. Because yeah. I know for a fact that as soon as I have people around, it, regardless of what they're doing, even if they're just typing something on their computer, I'm automatically three times as productive as I would be at home. So that's just true. Going in twice a week just means that I get so much more done than I would at home. So, I mean, even that is worth it, I think.
That was, I think, what also helped me a lot in the beginning. And now actually it's my dog, because I know, like, now she's better. But in the beginning, she was so bad at resting. And so I had to take every rest I could get and just work through that. So I was became much better at focusing at home now. So she's my studio mate.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think what I really liked about dogs is they give you structure, because they make you go outside at a certain time, and after the time it's obviously like food time, and then it's rest time, and then you can work, and then again you go out, so you have some structure. That's really nice.
I hated it in the beginning. I hate being restricted somehow.
Yeah,
I don't know if I never worked. I like university jobs. I had like small jobs, but I never worked outside of freelancing since I graduated. So I don't know if I can do it sometimes. I really like to have my freedom, but now I really adjusted with my dogs. So now it's I'm also very thankful. But I think it's really hard when you're a freelancer and then you get an employer, I would say. But that went into another direction anyway. Just thought about it.
That's definitely something.
Who wants a boss?
I can't imagine. Like when I did my internship, it was suffering for me to get up at a certain time, to be there at a certain time, and especially stay until a certain time.
Yeah.
That was just
work
like,
through.
Oh, I hated this so much.
Exactly. And now you can, okay, I work, for example, those days at the studio, you're really concentrated, and then the days at home, you're a bit concentrated, but also do other stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, you can't do that as a employer job.
Yeah.
Employee. Yeah.
It's too much control.
Very true. I want to keep talking about your work. And we tend to end these episodes by talking about the future often.
Yes.
Just because I'm always curious to just see how people see themselves. And so I want to know, how would you like to see your work develop? Where do you see yourself in, let's say, 10 years? This has officially turned into a job interview now.
We will employ you.
Yay. I love hate this question, because it's so hard. I love what I do right now. So sometimes when I get asked or ask myself that question, I sometimes would just keep it like it is. Mm-hmm. But then again, I know when I experiment or learn a new skill or something, it really gives me back the magic I know from studying it or something. And then, of course, it's great to widen your portfolio and attract other clients as well. And actually, this year, one of my goals is to get more into advertising. Because editorial-wise, I'm really happy how it's going, and I achieved some things I really wanted to achieve. But so far, my work wasn't so much asked for when it came to clients from the advertising world. And I think that would be interesting. I like those very short, kind of stressful deadlines, but I also had three projects from November until January, which is, for me, it's a super long time. I usually do work, do projects for 1 or 2 weeks. And I really enjoyed working on it so long and so thoroughly sometimes. It still was stressful, but it was different stress. And what I got recommended also from our agency was to try to simplify some of my work.
Okay.
And work with that. And I think that's really interesting to do, to focus on. I love details, but sometimes I hide myself behind those details or these full images, because sometimes it allows little mistakes here and there. And in conclusion, it works out well, I think, most of the time. But it could also work well when I use less details, less stuff, and then I have to be much more precise, probably. Mm-hmm. And that's something I'm interested in working on now. And besides that, in 10 years, yeah, it's not so... I think it's not so interesting, but yeah, still be able to work for clients, find work-life balance, hopefully experiment more, work on my personal projects. I really suck at that. So yeah, nothing major, but I'm really, really happy with my job. I really love it. Even though I have crises every now and then, I'm so thankful. So I would love to do that in 10 years, still get paid for that. I think that's...
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then animation, but I keep saying that since ages. So that's another thing. And I'm always curious, what are the answers with other guys? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Pretty much the same. I really like my life. Yeah. And I like how everything is going. Of course, there's like little things to improve. And also, like, maybe I should do outreach. I just realized in this podcast. And, but I actually, yeah, would love to do the same kind of thing still. And yeah, I don't want to change so much. So I'm hoping I can do this for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for me, illustration has always been my dream job. And it took forever to get to a point where I can do this full time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's fun. It's all I ever want to do. I could see myself maybe being more of a cartoonist. Like in a perfect world, if money wouldn't be an issue, I would just be drawing comics all day. That'd be so fun. But it just doesn't seem like... I know it's a valid career path, but it seems so difficult to make money off of it.
Yeah.
So I'm too scared to make that move just yet. So, I mean, for now, I like just being an illustrator and trying out new things and experimenting. But would either of you consider doing anything else? Or do you both just want to just be illustrators for the rest of your lives?
I would happily stay an illustrator. I don't know if it's realistic. I sometimes have the fear that, I don't know, with artificial intelligence or other things, maybe it won't work out, or your style isn't as interesting. But I think so far I've been proven that some people are still interested in news, and even new people, not only the ones you had before, but it changes constantly. And that's really reassuring. I also know older illustrators who still work. And maybe they shift their clients, but they still work. And I think that's really, really great to see. And it's also good that new people are coming in, because new work is also really interesting, new influences. And I don't really... I think when I was finishing school, I thought I could become anything. Like I said, my parents were very supportive, which is nice. But still, I think I was a bit naive. And now I know I suck at so many things. I tried teaching. I wasn't bad at it, but I have much more respect for my professors now and their overall concept for class and stuff. And I suck at other stuff too. So I don't know. I like bookkeeping, but I don't know if that will be... Yeah, I know, that's weird.
Okay.
But, and I don't know if that's something that will be taken from AI anyway, so I don't know. How about you, Vicky?
So whether I'd like to do only illustration?
Or another career or another...
Well, I have a lot of hobbies, so I like to do all the things. I'm really enjoying this podcast. I'm really enjoying the technical side of it. and getting into that, which is like so far from illustration, but it's kind of fun. And I also make music, but I would never want to make this my full-time career. I hope my label is not listening, but it's not gonna happen. This is a terrible idea, because I think like music is even worse than art. If you're in a band, it's, I don't know how this would be even possible. But I'd like to do this as a hobby for sure, or like a semi-professional thing. Yeah, but I think like my main thing would always be illustration in some kind of way.
But that's a good thought, that you have a main thing and then other things you really like. Mm. And those are just hobbies, but again, and sorry about talking about my dog so much, but I was really naive. She's my first dog. And we got into this whole training philosophy, which I like, but it's so complicated at first. But it's so interesting to learn more how dogs work and stuff. So it's really interesting to learn kind of a new skill. And then again, we now have a garden, my partner and me, and get into gardening. And by any means, I wouldn't know how to make a profession out of it. And like you said, you don't want your hobbies always to become a profession, because it can take the joy out of it. But I really enjoy that I found more hobbies as I got older, because I think for a long time it was illustration that was my hobby. Mm-hmm. And of course, meeting with friends, swimming, cycling, reading. But that's like what you write in a book, in a friend's book, but not...
But it's legit. I mean, even meeting with friends is a full-time hobby sometimes.
Yeah. But I also enjoy diving, what you said about the technical part, diving into something new and figuring it out. It's such a nice new aspect of life somehow.
Isn't it so nice that we kind of found a job that ideally we can do, forever, essentially. Because it's not like professional athletes where they peak at 25 and then it all goes downhill from there. Mm-hmm. I feel like just the more we do it, the better we get. You, I guess, have somewhat of an exercise routine here and there. Because it does, I mean, it does strain your back a lot if you're just hunched over all day and just drawing. I mean most illustrators I know have back pain of some sort, so that's definitely an issue. But apart from that, I mean, you could also just draw laying down on your back with there is ways as long as your hand and your brain still works.
Exactly, and you can do it traveling or from somewhere else, and that's so nice too, I think. Mm-hmm. Doing it almost everywhere. Sometimes you have to tell yourself to actually not draw on vacation or something, because I think it's really good, or at least for me, to sometimes take a break from it. And then I come back and I have so much more I want to draw, or so much more inspiration or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it is difficult to make that shift when you turn your hobby into your job. Sometimes, because sometimes I want to draw and then I'm like, but I don't feel like working, but it's not working. I'm drawing for myself.
Yeah, exactly. it doesn't have to look good. The outcome isn't what you focus on, but rather just, I don't know. Yeah, I always sucked at sketchbooks for that reason, because I think very much in the end result, which helps as an illustrator, of course, when you think about you're doing conceptual sketches, but it's also nice to not always think in the end result and just go along, see how the drawing will work out or what direction it will evolve in. Yeah.
Oh, that's such a hard thing to do though.
I think at university you really learned the other way, and now not the way is the goal, or how you say it in English. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That was really nice, really insightful. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks so much. We're so happy
to have had you. Could you also tell our listeners where to find you online? Instagram?
Yes.
And all of the things.
So, exactly. So Instagram obviously is the most recent platform you can find my work at. And yeah, my family name is quite difficult, Siladji, so I shortened it. And it's a Kati C, so I try to spell it in English, K-A-T-I-S-Z-I. And that's my handle. And it's also the same for my website, which is katic.com. And you can find my work there if you want to see it. And thanks cool. so much for your for inviting me. It has been such a pleasure.
Cool.
Yeah, this was fun.
Yes.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning into this super interesting chat we just had with Kati and her dog. It was an absolute pleasure. On the next episode, we'll be talking to lettering legend Mary-Kate McDevitt. So make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you won't miss any of the great conversations we have coming up. And just give us a 5-star review already.
Yes.
We know you haven't done it yet. We're watching you.
I think we only have 5-star reviews. Did you see that? I mean,
oh, really?
I don't want to jinx it now, but I think it was like on Spotify, it was only 5 stars. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you for giving us
That's
the
so nice.
Nice reviews.
Yay. Thank you so much. All right. On that note, you will hear from us in 2 weeks. That's it. Bye, y'all.
Ciao.
I get Bye-bye. To say y'all. I'm from the South. Of Germany. Thanks for tuning in to Paid to Draw.
If you want to follow us on Instagram, you can find us at Paid to Draw Podcast. I'm at Vicuña_illustration.
And I'm at David Leuter. That's at David LEUTERT.
The music is by Amanda Death, that's Amanda and DEFF. See you next week!